Today I'm talking to Luke Taylor. You're the Liberal Democrat MP for Sutton and Cheam, and you're the party spokesperson for London. Good afternoon, Luke, and welcome back to Radio Jackie.
Thank you, Jackie. Always a pleasure.
So, what do you think has to be done after it was revealed that 9 in 10 tool thefts in London were unsolved in the last 5 years? Do you think this is an opportunist theft, or do you think there is something run by organised gangs?
I mean, I think inevitably there will be gangs involved in this. You saw how the prevalence of cattle converter thefts, they explode and then they die down. I think that there are opportunities there for gangs to get involved and to make small fortunes from this really damaging attack on tradespeople. We did a freedom of information request and asked the police what the sort of success rate in finding the culprits and bringing them to justice was, and it's really terrifying that there is such a low amount of police resource put into this, but also then low success in actually holding people accountable. And the problem is, because they're going unsolved, these people are free to continue and to target others. So ultimately it comes down to police numbers, really. The amount of time and effort the police have to spend on this, the amount of time they've got to investigate, actually take evidence, because a lot of the time they don't even get that far. They will look at a site, they will look at where the tool's been taken from, the vehicle that's been broken into, for example. They will find no evidence and then take no further action. And that's so damaging for the tradesmen who are involved, because they've got no chance of getting the tools back. And it allows these gangs, these individuals, to continue to target other tradespeople. So it's really terrible. And I've heard accounts from tradespeople. There was a rally here in Parliament where people came from across the country, and they talked about how their vehicles have been targeted repeatedly, and now they were just terrified of leaving the vehicles out of sight. Some of them won't take a job unless there is secure parking, or that they can see their vehicle pretty constantly throughout the day. And being in that situation is terrifying. It's really damaging. I'm sitting on the police or the Crime and Policing Bill Committee at the moment, and within that bill there are new protections for retail workers, and we've been trying to look at the definition of retail workers and try and stretch it to the extent that we can provide those same protections from assault, those same protections for the theft of equipment that's essential to their job, to tradespeople working in the homes of customers, of clients. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like the wording is broad enough to be able to cover them, but it is something that we are working on. I know there are other MPs who are looking at sentencing approach, so that's putting tougher sentences on that offence, which should serve as a deterrent. But fundamentally, if we can change the protections that workers have, whether it is whilst they're working in a home or whether they're defending their tools from an attacker, then that's definitely something that would, I'm sure, would be supported by industry.
Yeah. Do you think the police cut 1,700 jobs going in London are going to help this?
It's not going to help people. It's not going to help our residents. It's not going to help clearing up crimes. It's not going to help the victims of sexual assault. It's not going to help any victims who are suffering from stalking. These tough decisions that police are having to take, 1,700 staff, exactly as you said, is really terrifying. And what I find very frustrating, and again, whilst I have every sympathy with the government having to clear up the awful mess the Conservatives left our country, my sympathy with their position is running low. I mean, we are seeing the statistics on tool crime, for example, that people's livelihoods being put at risk. This will make it worse. I visited the Stalking Threat Assessment Centre yesterday, which is over in Stratford, and I heard the incredible work that the team there do on identifying threats to mostly to women, some men as well. But stalking is a terrible crime that affects people so in so many ways. Their work may well be impacted by these cuts to staffing, and that's going to put more people at risk, and it's going to lead to fewer crimes being cleared up, which means fewer people being taken off the streets. Like I say, the economy is in a really poor situation. Our police force is in a really poor situation after the neglect from the Conservative government, but we do need to see more action from the Labour government now to actually improve things for my residents in Sutton and Cheam and across London.
I think there's a place for AI with this technology, new technology to get these crimes.
Anything that can help with analysis. I mean, we go through phases. AI is the latest one where there is a silver bullet that's going to fix everything, and then it turns out not to be the case. We had blockchain previously. We had big data before that. You know, these new tools will improve things undoubtedly. It will mean that hopefully we can see patterns in data that people themselves can't see. But it has to be. I mean, I look at these things with a bit of a skeptical eye. I don't really believe the hype, but anything it can do to improve analysis, then that's got to be a good thing.
Good. Well, moving on. As the Lib Dem chair of aviation of the aviation APPG, why do you think there's a need for an urgent inquiry into the Heathrow substation fire? What measures do you think should be put in place?
Well, it was alarming, wasn't it? We saw how critically, how important to our daily lives aviation is. When Heathrow shut down, we heard stories of people traveling to see family, to see friends, to weddings. We saw the impact it had on medical supplies, on trade. Heathrow is our biggest port in the UK by value, so the amount of goods that come through there, critical to our just-in-time supply chains in this country. Now, we need to be really careful that we don't expose ourselves, not only in this case to an accident, as it appeared to be, the substation going up, but also acts of terrorism. If our foes know that they can shut down our biggest airport, and you know, not only our biggest airport but other airports with such a simple act, then we are all, you know, going to be worse off. So we need an inquiry to get to the bottom of what happened. My years working in aviation taught me that you always have multiple supplies, you have energy storage and backup. In this case, Heathrow claimed that they had it, but it didn't switch over correctly. And I think they were being as precautious or applying as much precaution as they could to not have passengers turning up at airports and then not being able to travel. So I understand their reticence to take a risk on that, but it really does highlight where critical national infrastructure needs to be properly protected. So an inquiry should get to the bottom of exactly what happened.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of media hype as to how long the delays would take place. I heard certain travel correspondents saying it would take weeks. My son actually flew out from Heathrow the next morning at 7 a.m., only 30 minutes late. So in a way, it was good to see how quickly and to show them how quickly Heathrow can get back on its feet, don't you think?
No, I think you're completely right. I was watching flight radar in the afternoon, watching some of the aircraft relocating from Gatwick, where they come in the morning. So even on Friday afternoon, was it Friday or was it Thursday? Even in the afternoon of the day of the incident, you were seeing aircraft starting to come in and position for departure. And I think a lot of the danger was overhyped as well. You know, there were battery systems and emergency supplies were able to supply the landing lights, for example. ATC tower was unaffected. They all worked as planned, but the fact that you couldn't buy a cup of coffee in Costa on your way through was the thing that, you know, wasn't utterly essential, but you can understand the airport not wanting to have people there in case the check-in systems went down, for example. So we need to find out what's happened and make sure that whether it is an airport, whether it is a port, whether it is motorway control systems, because we have smart motorways these days, however our infrastructure is protected, it needs to be understood more clearly. And report after report from the National Infrastructure Commission has said that we need standards across industry on resilience. The government need to, you know, make sure they're implementing the findings of that. And that's what the point I made to the minister when the question session was given.
Absolutely. Now, what feedback have you had from your constituents in Zone 5 who have been hit by this £110 a year fare rise in March?
So I mean, I haven't had any emails in my inbox yet, but suffice to say, the residents who are suffering from poor service at the moment will be even paying even more for probably an even worse service, because as demand increases, as it inevitably does, we're not seeing improvements in service. We're not seeing more trains being put on, and that will, you know, really rankle with those people who are paying more, as you say, for the privilege. We're going to start seeing train routes being taken back into government hands, the nationalisation. The first one is Southwest Rail in the coming weeks, I think it is. Now, nationalisation is all well and good, but unless additional money is being put in to provide more frequent services, to upgrade the rolling stock, which you and me saw at the launch of the new
Absolutely.
South West Rail trains in Waterloo a couple of months ago. You know, they are bringing those online in places, but we need to see those on other lines as well. There is tired rolling stock. There are crowded trains that just aren't good enough. National Rail or Great British Rail, as it's going to be called, should see some benefits to different fleets, different areas being able to order at the same time. There should be benefits for British industry as well. But the government need to put the money up to actually see those improvements, and they've not done that yet. But people are paying through the nose for a service that's getting worse.
Finally, tariffs. Ed Davey is pushing a buy local, back Britain campaign, possibly saying we should be reciprocating with our own tariffs and more engagement with the EU. The EU this morning have suggested zero for zero deal, and they're also saying they're open now to a trade deal with the UK. Is this all about negotiating?
It is negotiating in a way. The problem with Donald Trump is you can't negotiate with somebody who doesn't know what their targets are. He's a bully, and he approaches trade with a the mentality that somebody has to lose. The tariffs are in there because he feels like people have to suffer for him to win. Trade isn't like that. Trade is about you know, leveraging the things that you're good at and the things that you have value, whether it's resources, whether it's skills, whether it's manufacturing, to get, you know, to trade for, you know, objects and things that you don't have and you can't produce in your country. Unfortunately, Donald Trump doesn't understand this and sees it in through the lens of, you know, the very reductive approach to. You know, we're paying more and we're getting less from this particular country, even though there's nothing you produce that they need. So, you know, it's a really difficult thing. So you say it's about negotiation. I wish you could negotiate with Donald Trump. Unfortunately, I don't think you could do. So what you need to do is come from a position of strength. And in this case, it is saying that, well, actually, we don't need to buy your Teslas. We've got, you know, you've got UK built cars that we can trade with, or cars from our more trustworthy, our more friendly partners. And one of the biggest ones and the closest one in the world is the European Union. And we've been pushing hard for us to get a better deal with Europe for a very, very long time. Whether that is a customs union, whether it's the customs union, there are things that we can do and there are advantages we can get from that. We cannot capitulate to Donald Trump's demands to weaken our taxes on social media companies. We cannot capitulate on letting hormone-fed beef or chlorinated chicken into our shops, which is what Nigel Farage wants to do. I think that the government, you know, are sounding like they are resisting these sorts of things, but we cannot be giving in to a bully when it's not entirely clear what his plan is in the first place. You know, he's unpredictable, he's unreliable, he's untrustworthy. So it doesn't do us any good by giving him what he thinks he wants today, because it'll change tomorrow, and you're in an even weaker position by then.
I think Donald Trump thinks he's trying to say to the Americans, buy American, just as Ed Davey is saying to us, buy British. And there may be some people say that's a bit of hypocritical, but you're doing the same thing, saying to do the same thing as Donald Trump, but in a slightly different way. What's
Well,
your angle on that?
it's reflecting that the forces of globalization have built supply chains across the world, and those supply chains vary based on whether a country wants to prioritize a particular industry. We see South Korea, Japan, China producing a lot of cars. We see Britain, we produce high quality aircraft parts, for example, wings for all the Airbus that fly, Rolls-Royce engines, you know, high value products that you can't produce elsewhere in the world. Each country specializes. You have a trade surplus with some countries and a deficit with others, but that just might be because, and often that's because your particular country doesn't lack a particular thing from somewhere else, or you know, there just isn't an easy market for fresh goods, for example, if you're on the other side of the planet. The Buy British, you know, Buy Local campaign, it makes our supply chains more resilient. It means that we're able to support local businesses. You know, nobody's going to argue with the suggestion that you should go down to your local farm shop or your local high street and buy goods from producers who are doing it on the high street, rather than buying. And I think the campaign from Ed is to say, well, look, if you've got an object or a produce that you've got a choice between buying a British version, which is produced by people earning a good wage in a good factory under good welfare standards, then that's probably better than buying something from America, where they are currently trying to reduce protections for workers. You see, in Florida, I think it was, they've just changed the law to allow under 16s to work overnight shifts. They've taken away guaranteed meal breaks for 14 and 15-year-olds working in factories. That's insane. To say that those, we should be supporting countries and companies that do that sort of stuff, really isn't what I want to be doing. And I think what Ed's saying is that we need to be supporting local businesses, local companies who are putting money back into our local economy and providing employment for local people, rather than providing money to boost a country where, their focus isn't on welfare, it isn't on high quality, it's on trying to beat the world. It's this back to the winners and the losers again. And I just don't think that works for anyone.
No, and actually in Canada, they were saying that strawberries from, I think, Florida were six times cheaper than Canadian strawberries, and the shelves were full of the Florida strawberries because everybody was buying the local berries.
Exactly.
So that's how it works.
It is. I lived in Canada for a couple of years, and they are incredibly proud of Canadian produce. There's a lot of very good Canadian produce, just like there is great English produce that we can buy as an alternative. I think that the trade war that Donald Trump has started is going to be very, very damaging to not only his people, but trade around the world. It's going to reduce trust. It's going to reduce free trade, which means that we're all going to suffer.
I'll let you go now. Have a good afternoon
Thanks,
and thank
Jackie.
you
Good to
again.
see you.
Bye for
Cheers.
now.
Bye.
Bye.